Hello, welcome back to Have Roots, Will Travel. My name is Lisa Elvin Stoltari, and I'm a genealogist and a passionate traveler. In this series that I have been doing, we have been looking at Les Filles du Roi, the King's Daughters, which is a subject near and dear to my heart. We are actually on episode number 37 this time, so we're going to get to know a brand new Filles du Roi in a minute. Now, I want to make sure to let you know that I do have a website called Have Roots Will Travel. I am on Twitter and Facebook. And if you want to subscribe to the channel, like the video, all of that is great for me. With that, let's get started. Now, Les Filles du Roi, the King's Daughters, is a program that was started in Quebec. I produced a video on this on my channel, so you can have a look at it. It's called the Program 2.0. And in it, I describe all the ins and outs of the program. It's really worthwhile looking at if you want to get a taste of what these young ladies had to go through in order to come to New France and become truly the founding mothers of Canada in many respects. The Filles du Roi we will be studying today, her name is Louise Guerregoté, and she happens to be my 10 times great-grandmother. She's also the grandmother of one of my dear friends, and also the grandmother of a wife of a dear friend of mine as well. So I think Louise's descendancy extends far and wide. So let's get to know Louise. So Louise was born in 1637 in a small village called Terry, which is very close to the larger town of La Rochelle, which we've seen many, many times. The church in her village dates from the 12th century. This is where she would have been baptized. Her parents were Jacques Guerregoté and Françoise Bernard. By 1663, Louise had lost both parents, and she embarked on the program. I don't know if she sought after the recruitment of Les Filles du Roi program or she was recruited, but nevertheless, she embarked on the Phoenix de Flessingeur. On June 30th, 1663 is when she arrived in Quebec City. She is joined by about 30 other pioneers really in this program. And we have profiled just one of those, Marie Foucault, who's another one of my great grandmothers, in episode 5. So that's really interesting that she was on that first boat. Well, as interesting as, Louise is, Daniel is just amazing. Daniel has such an interesting profile. He was born out of wedlock to François Perron and Jeanne Suire. His mother, Jeanne, was married. And yet, François and Jeanne wrote up a contract a few weeks before Daniel's birth. Very forward thinking. François was to pay Jeanne £50 for the care of Daniel. So it seems that Daniel was raised by his mother and her husband. How very, very modern of them. Daniel's father was Protestant, a Huguenot, and therefore Daniel, I am assuming, became a Protestant as well. We'll have verification of this in a couple of slides. I'm not sure of his mother and the parentage. Let's review a little bit about where Daniel was born to discover more about the Protestants in France, and in particular La Rochelle. This city can trace its history back to the Gallo-Roman period. It was granted a charter by the Dukes of Aquitaine in 1130. Then by 1152, when Eleanor of Aquitaine married King Henry of England, the English market was opened up and this small town became the largest port in the Atlantic. This, of course, would begin the influx of Protestants and would create the intense battles that dominated this countryside for several centuries. 10 years before Daniel was born, we had the siege of La Rochelle in 1628, where for 14 months the city was blockaded and finally had to surrender. Why? Because the Protestants wanted to retain their freedom. This was not to be, however. So this was the world Daniel was born into. His father was Protestant, and that sets the tale. In 1661, 300 Huguenots' families were expelled from La Rochelle. Now, his father, François, was a merchant, and I think a fairly prosperous one. In the spring of 1662, François sends his son Daniel to represent him in New France. By the fall of 1662, however, Daniel had fallen in love with the lovely Filles du Roi, Louise. who had arrived just months before. Daniel decides to stay and marry Louise. However, he cannot marry her or stay in the New France until he renounces his religion. So on the 6th of December, 1663, Daniel renounces his Protestant faith, and there is the actual proof of that. It's amazing what those records will prove, and he is finally admitted into the Catholic Church, so it's a process. So finally, by February 26, 1664, Louise and Daniel were married at Chateau Richer. Just amazing. All of the journey that they had to go through in order to marry, even. And on a side note, even hundreds of years later, when my Protestant father married my Catholic mother, they were not allowed, he didn't have to renounce his faith, but they were not allowed to marry inside the church unless he converted, which he didn't want to do. So they were married in the vestibule outside the church, and my mother couldn't have she had a priest and all of that, but it wasn't the same as an actual church wedding, if you will. So, as they say in French, tout change et tout reste la même chose. It's very different now, of course, but even in 1959, there was still that separation. Daniel and Louise settle in Chateau Richer, where their first three children are born. Let's review a little bit about Chateau Richer. You can see it, it's in the square box, and that's the current today's welcoming sign that you would see. In 1626, Samuel de Champlain establishes in Chateau Richer the first farm in the St. Lawrence Valley to feed the people of Quebec City. Jean Bourdon's map of 1641 is the earliest source that mentions the name Chateau Richer, referring only to the cape or headland on which it stands, the present church. But the origin of this name remains uncertain. So Chateau, which means castle, Richer could be rich. So don't really know the origins. If anyone has ever heard of any more information on that, please, in the comments below, that would be awesome. In 1646, Olivier Le Tardif, Lord and Chief Prosecutor, granted 20 concessions to the inhabitants of Chateau Richer so that they could officially establish themselves. By 1678, the local parish was formed, named La Visitation de Notre-Dame. And by 1753, Chateau Richer became the very first organized village in New France. So it is definitely one of the oldest places that you can go to really feel that sense of history, if you will. And their genealogy society and their historicals are among the best I've ever seen. Please have a look at that. I will include that in the notes as well. Well, after a couple of years, Louise and Daniel then moved to a place called L'Ange Gardien, which literally means guardian angel. It's located about 14 kilometers from Quebec City, about 9 miles. The history of L'Ange Gardien is Pierre Meilleur and Jean Trudel became the first permanent settlers on September 29, 1657. And a mass was celebrated in 1664 in the house of Jean Trudel. And so at this point that they celebrated the mass, this became a parish, and that's how it was formed. So if your descendancy has anything to do with Jean Trudel or Pierre Meilleur, you can take pride in their achievements as well. And so it broke off from Chateau Richer at that point. In 1664, there are approximately only 125 people. Gradually, the funds for a church were collected, and by 1675, a stone church was built. A new church was built in 1717, and is in the place where the current church that I've shown the picture of on the right. And before even this new church could be built, there was a fire in 1931, and they had to rebuild, and this is the church that we have today. The middle picture is just an incredible view of L'Ange Gardien from the sea. It's a beautiful place. There's no question about that. And you can kind of see where L'Ange Gardien is in relationship to Quebec City on this map. I'm pointing to it right now. So they end up having six children. Antoine marries Jeanne Tremblay and has eight children, all of whom make it to adulthood. Francois died at 6 weeks of age. Marie marries Louis Tremblay, and yes, that's Antoine's wife, Jeanne's brother, and they have six children in all. Marie-Madeleine marries Charles Godet and had nine children, eight of whom make it. Jean marries Anne-Marie-Jeanne Godet, the sister of Marie-Madeleine's husband, Charles, and had four children. Upon her death, he marries Suzanne Touchet and had 11 children, nine of whom make it to adulthood. Finally, Anne marries Joseph Graton and has four children. Upon his death, she marries André Etier and had four children. All eight of her children make it to adulthood. So a very, very good lineage here. Suddenly, Daniel dies at the age of 40, leaving Louise and his five remaining children, Antoine 14, Marie 11, Madeleine 8, Jean 6, and Anne 2. There is no burial record, but the date of death would be found in the inventory after death by Louise, in which it's stated that he died February 22nd, 1678. And I am including the monument that the Perron Association did. It's an incredible group of people of what they've done. I would urge you to go and have a look at lesfamilleperron.org. I've put the website on the notes section so you can further investigate. So there's a new beginning and a new husband for our beautiful Louise. She marries Charles Louis Allais. He was from Paris and had been living in New France, presumably as a bachelor, for 12 years before he marries Louise. Taking on a widow and her five children would have been a daunting task, but from all accounts, he was up for the challenge. He actually came to New France and was a domestic employee, and so one would think that he would then have taken over the farm for Louise and helped keep growing what they had begun, her and Daniel. So after a couple of years, they move to Beaupré, which is where Charles-Louis had been living before his marriage to Louise. And in modern calculations, Angegardien and Beaupré are about 17 minutes apart, which of course in 1681 would have been a much longer journey, but still close enough. The origins of this town, which today has about 3,500 people, began when apparently, soldiers from Breton arrived and were startled by the beauty of the place and apparently exclaimed, "Oh, le beau pré," which actually means beautiful meadow. And so looking at the picture on the right, you can kind of see what they meant. It really is gorgeous. And at the 1666 census, Quebec City and Beaupré had essentially the same population. So at one point, Beaupré was kind of catching up. It didn't, though. It ultimately remained a small village. It was not until 1928 that the place was incorporated as the parish municipality of Notre-Dame-du-Rosaire, but its name was changed to Beaupré that same year in order to avoid confusion with several other namesake parishes. And we see this often in Quebec, where parishes are just, there's just so many names to go around, I guess, in the Catholic religion. By 1962, the parish municipality gained the town status and became La Ville de Beaupré. It is actually home to a fabulous ski resort called Mont Sainte-Anne, and it is one of the best. I want to draw your attention to to this little piece here, which says, this was the 1681 census. We have Charles Allais, 40 years old, Louise Gargetin, also 40, Enfant Jean, Anne, and that's all who's living there. They have one gun, two goats, and 15 arpents, which is about 10 acres of land, 10, 12 acres of land. Louise would be married to Charles-Louis for 20 years until he too passed away in 1699. Louise herself would die 5 years later in the home of her eldest son, Antoine. She and her first husband are buried in the Angegardien Cemetery. The plaque that you see here is found in her hometown of Ferrières on the church wall and was put there by the Parents Association of North America. So they actually went to France and kind of honored her. So I think that's amazing as well. So note to self, if you go to France and you're in that part of La Rochelle, there she is. In summary, Louise was truly a remarkable woman, outliving two husbands and the death of several children, and also being able to turn around, move around at least four different homes that we can verify. I think she was a woman who just got it done and was very practical and managed to truly create some very, very strong roots here in North America, and I think is one of the strongest filles du roi that I've seen. I thank her for her contributions, and I'm talking to you today because of her. So with that, I will say goodbye for now. We are now going to be looking at video number 38, I believe, in the next video. Until then, I bid you adieu. And au revoir.